Well, let me start out by asking a question. Who likes dinosaurs? All right, most everybody. And those of you who didn't raise your hands, what's the matter with you? All right. I mean, who can not like dinosaurs, right? They're just so cool. You see these skeletons in these museums, these amazing creatures, and it's just very impressive. But for a lot of Christians, they've got questions about dinosaurs. For instance, did dinosaurs evolve from other creatures? Did they live millions of years ago? Did they rule the earth? Were they wiped out by a meteorite 66 million years ago? That's the story we're often told. And how do dinosaurs fit into the Bible? So this afternoon, I want to give you two simple rules for making sense of dinosaurs. The first is that you believe the Bible. And the second is that you follow the clues. Now, what I want to do this afternoon is sort of walk you through how to think biblically about a topic, developing a Christian worldview. And we're going to use dinosaurs as an example. So we start with the Bible. And what does the Bible say? If we're trying to construct a biblical understanding of dinosaurs, Genesis would probably be a good place to start. We have the 6 days of creation. And a question you might ask is, on which day did God make the dinosaurs? Now, before we can answer that question, you have to be able to tell whether or not it's a dinosaur. So how do you tell if it's a dinosaur? Well, the way you tell is if it's a reptile and the legs go straight down, it's a dinosaur. Okay? And that's basically the defining characteristic. So there are a lot of animals out there that people call dinosaurs, but technically they aren't. So I'm going to give you a little quiz here. A mosasaur, is that a dinosaur? No, right? How about a plesiosaur? No, legs don't go straight down. How about a flying reptile like a pteranodon? Nope, legs don't go straight down. Now, these are sometimes associated with dinosaurs because they're said to have lived millions of years ago along with dinosaurs, but these are flying and swimming creatures. And we know from Scripture that God made them on day 5 of the creation week. So dinosaurs, though, are land animals. So on what day did God make the land animals? Day 6, right? Okay. Now, whom else did God make on day 6? He created Adam and Eve on day 6. So right off the bat, if we just start with Scripture and ignore what the secular scientists are saying, you automatically can conclude that people and dinosaurs were, in fact, on the earth at the same time. There wasn't this age of dinosaurs where dinosaurs ruled the earth. Did dinosaurs evolve? Well, let's go back to the Bible. What does the Bible say? We read in Genesis chapter 1, verse 25, "And God made the beast of the earth according to its kind, cattle according to its kind, and everything that creeps on the earth according to its kind." Now, that phrase, according to its kind, is very important. It actually appears 10 times in Genesis chapter 1. So what does that mean? So if a creature reproduces after its kind, that basically rules out any kind of evolution, right? Because in order for evolution to occur, there has to be at least some of the time when creatures reproduce not after their kind, where you have a fish that somehow, over time, reproduces and gives you an amphibian. And then the amphibian eventually turns into a reptile, the reptile turns into birds, and so on and so forth. But if creatures are after their kind, if they reproduce after their kind, that doesn't leave any room for evolution. And the science actually confirms this. Lest you think we're making this up, let me tell you what some secular evolutionists said about dinosaur fossils. He said, "From my reading of the fossil record of dinosaurs, no direct ancestors have been discovered for any dinosaur species. Alas, my list of dinosaurian ancestors is an empty one." And that's Dr. David Westheimpel. He was the head writer, basically, on this encyclopedic reference work on dinosaurs called the Dinosauria. He's saying, we don't have any evidence that there were ancestors that the dinosaurs evolved from. Paul Sereno at the University of Chicago said, early on again, I think researchers and even maybe lay people really felt that we had more ancestors in the fossil record than we actually do. We don't have a lot of ancestors. We have a lot of twigs. So dinosaurs did not evolve, and neither did anything else. Now, we could say the same thing about other creatures. We don't see ancestors for these other kinds of animals as well. And by the way, while we're on the topic, dinosaurs did not evolve into birds either. Okay, there's this big fanatical push to try to argue that the dinosaurs evolved into birds. You will see, you know, you've got feathers and hair, really weird stuff. And it's just not correct, okay? They didn't evolve and they didn't turn into birds either. There's huge anatomical problems with trying to argue that a dinosaur could turn into a bird. And there's really no good evidence for it either. Now, a question you might wonder is, well, what did the dinosaurs eat, especially before Adam sinned? Well, the Bible tells us in Genesis chapter 1, verse 25, God says, "Also to every beast of the earth, to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth in which there is life, I have given every green herb for food," and it was so. So what does that mean? Well, that means there were no meat eaters to begin with, okay? Everyone was vegetarian. Adam and Eve were a vegetarian as well. So the dinosaurs were originally plant eaters, even this fellow right here, okay? Just because he has sharp teeth does not necessarily mean he was a meat eater. You know, imagine you're a T-Rex and you're living in the pre-fall world and you want to eat a watermelon. Okay, you don't have any steak knives, but those teeth might come in handy for eating a watermelon. Now, if these animals started out as vegetarian, that means you didn't have any reason to be afraid of them from the very beginning. Okay, dinosaurs would not have been fierce. They would not have been carnivorous meat eaters. And so I want to ask a question that maybe some of you never thought about this, but do you realize how badly we messed up when we sinned? Because had Adam not sinned, kids, you could have had a pet dinosaur. Really? You could have had a pet dinosaur. Okay, but we sinned, we blew it, and it didn't work out. So we're believing the Bible, and we're going to follow the clues. We're going to make logical deductions based on what Scripture says. So another question you might have is, well, how do we even know that dinosaurs existed in the first place? Well, one way we know is because we have their fossil remains, okay? The bone has been replaced by minerals. It's hard and stony. It's not really rock per se, but it's hard. And we find these fossils all over the place. So what are fossils anyway? Basically, they're the remains of dead animals, okay? And they're found in sedimentary rocks, which are almost always water deposited. Now, just so you know, it's not normal for an animal to fossilize. Normally, when an animal dies, you don't see it turn into a fossil. This is what normally happens. Okay, so we're going to speed up time here. And unfortunately, this is long after lunch because this is really gross. But that's what normally happens, right? Okay, you know, it doesn't fossilize. It decays. It gets eaten by scavengers. So you obviously need special conditions in order for something to fossilize. It's got to be buried rapidly in order for this to happen. Now, does the Bible give us a clue about when these dinosaur fossils could have been formed? Well, the Bible has a lot to say about death. And Romans 5:12, we read, "Therefore, just as sin is through one man, sin entered the world, and death through sin, and thus death spread to all men because all sin." So death entered the world as a result of Adam's sin. Now, some people will say, well, that was just human death. Maybe you could have had animal death. Well, God said everything he made was very good, and we know the dinosaurs started out as plant eaters. That doesn't jive with an idea that there was animal death in the pre-fall world. Furthermore, we know that the creation was subjected to frustration, to futility, and God's going to undo that one day bring back that original paradise that we had before. So death and suffering entered the world because of Adam's sin, and these fossils are found in what we call sedimentary rocks. And sedimentary rocks are almost always formed by water, and we would argue they're almost always formed by moving water. It's interesting, evolutionists will admit that nearly all sedimentary rocks are water deposited. And when I was an undergraduate, I was writing an essay about why I believed in the Genesis flood. So I went to the geology department and asked one of the professors there what percentage of sedimentary rocks or water deposit. He said, well, probably about 95%. And then I don't remember if he asked me why I wanted to know that or if I just volunteered it, but I said, yeah, I'm writing an essay about why I believe in the Genesis flood. He said, well, it's more like 90%. Okay, that may have had something to do with his estimate, but they will admit nearly all of them are water deposited. Now, they will try to argue a lot of them were deposited under tranquil conditions, but there is strong evidence against that, that this was laid down by moving water. And so we're arguing that this is evidence of a watery catastrophe. Now, is there an event in the Bible that could maybe, I don't know, explain this? It involves death and a lot of water. Don't strain your brain too hard, but we think the Genesis flood is the key. It's the key to explaining these fossils. So we're arguing that those fossils, you know, these dinosaurs, they didn't live millions of years ago. When you look at those fossils, you're looking at the remains of animals that perished during the Genesis flood. In fact, in Dallas, I believe this photo was taken at the Perot Museum, which is basically a temple for evolution. But it's funny, they tell you in there, yeah, Dallas, Texas used to be underwater. And they found fossils of these giant marine reptiles, these mosasaurs, that are about 45 feet long near Texas, a little bit east of Texas. They even find them in places like Kansas. Well, you know, what are these marine creatures doing in Kansas and Texas? Well, that makes sense in light of the flood. Okay, you're gonna have marine and land creatures buried together. In fact, you may not realize this, but dinosaur fossils are often found accompanied with fossils of marine creatures, fishes, clams, shells. You've even got some evidence of sharks. Okay. In fact, most of the dinosaur fossils from Europe, if I'm not mistaken, are from marine sediments. In fact, one of our colleagues did an article. It was pretty recent. In fact, it may be in one of those Axe and Facts articles out there, but they found recently in a drill core in the North Sea, they found a dinosaur bone in seafloor sediments. They were 70 miles offshore and a mile and a half down. It's like, what on earth is a dinosaur bone doing there? Okay? You often find dinosaur bones in places they're not supposed to be, but this makes perfect sense, okay? We have this sequence of fossils. Oops, I turned this off by mistake. But we're saying this is actually a flood sequence, okay? The reason you have marine creatures down at the bottom is because those areas were inundated first, and then you got the lowlands, and then gradually then went up to the higher elevations. Let's think some more. Remember, we're trying to follow the clues. God told Noah to take on the ark representatives of all the air-breathing, land-dwelling animals. Now, we've already said dinosaurs are land animals, right? Do dinosaurs breathe air? Yes. Okay. So that means dinosaurs would have been on Noah's ark. And yes, Noah's ark was plenty big enough for those creatures. If you assume a cubit is 18 inches, I mean, the ark would have been at least 450 feet long, possibly bigger, you know, if you're using a longer cubit. There is plenty of space on the ark. In fact, we've got this model of Noah's ark that's now on permanent display at the ICR Discovery Center. And it was made by one of our workers, Mr. Ernie Carrasco. And the scale isn't exact, but it's pretty close. And just to kind of give you a feel, there's a railroad boxcar right there. Okay, that gives you a feel for how big the ark was. And there's plenty of room on the ark. And people say, well, what about the really big dinosaurs? Well, Noah probably took younger dinosaurs on the ark, because remember, the whole point of taking these animals on the ark is so that they can reproduce and fill the earth after the flood. So you would want to take younger dinosaurs who have their full lives ahead of them in order to do that. Furthermore, we don't think he had to take that many dinosaurs. We estimate there's probably only about 50 to 60 dinosaur kinds. And so Noah would probably have only had to have taken between 100 and 120 dinosaurs on the ark. And most of them weren't that big. Most of them, You know, the average, quote unquote, size of a dinosaur would probably have been that of a buffalo. Okay, so they're not nearly all that big. Now, again, we're thinking logically about this. If Noah took dinosaurs on the ark, it stands to reason the dinosaurs got off the ark too. I mean, that may seem obvious, but it's something to think about. It's logical. And that raises the possibility that could people and dinosaurs have coexisted after the flood? Now, if you bring this idea up to an evolutionist, they will insist that no one's ever seen a living dinosaur. And some people get really upset with us creationists when we suggest that people and dinosaurs coexisted. But that's exactly what we think. In fact, you might expect that dinosaurs might even be mentioned in the Bible. Now, they're not going to be called dinosaurs because the word dinosaur was not invented until 1841. But they might be called under other names. And there's lots of examples of this in Scripture. If we look at the 40th chapter of the book of Job, God is describing an animal to Job called the behemoth. And he says, "Look now at the behemoth, which I made along with you. He eats grass like an ox." Now, that's kind of interesting for a couple of reasons. First, the Lord says he made this animal with man. It's almost as if the Lord in his foreknowledge is anticipating the fact that there's one day going to come a day when people are going to say nobody ever saw a living dinosaur. It's almost like he's specifically addressing that. And he also says that the dinosaurs eat grass. Now that's interesting too, because evolutionists used to insist that grasses did not evolve until millions of years after the dinosaurs went extinct. So presumably, there was no way that dinosaurs could have eaten grass. Well, guess what? They've examined fossilized dinosaur poop, and sure enough, they got grasses in them. Okay, so we know that dinosaurs ate grasses, just as this passage is suggesting. The Lord continues to talk to Job. He says, "See now, his strength is in his hips, and his power is in his stomach muscles. He moves his tail like a cedar. The sinews of his thighs are tightly knit." I don't know of any animal other than a dinosaur whose tail can reasonably be compared to that of a tree, or whose motion can be compared to that of a tree. In fact, we're now learning that some of these dinosaurs, when they walked, the tail would actually go back and forth, side to side, to help them balance. So as they're walking along, the tail is literally moving back and forth like a tree. So this is a very apt description of a dinosaur. His bones are like beams of bronze, his ribs like bars of iron. If you look at these big bones that you see in the museum, these fossilized bones, that is a very apt description. And then God goes on to say that he's the first of the ways of God, basically the greatest of God's creation. Only he who made him can bring near his sword. The Bible also talks about a great sea monster called Leviathan. The entire 41st chapter of the book of Job is dedicated to a description of this animal. It's also mentioned in the Psalms and even in Isaiah. And candidly, we're not sure exactly what this animal is. Some people think maybe it was a mosasaur. Others think maybe it could have been a super crocodile. You know, there were giant crocodiles that could have actually given a T-Rex a run for its money. Some think, well, maybe that's this animal right here. Tim Clary at ICR thinks it's a Spinosaurus, which was a swimming dinosaur and a pretty fierce creature. Furthermore, if you look in the Old Testament, and especially the older Bible translations, dragons are mentioned about 20 times in the Old Testament. Now, a lot of the newer translations claim that this word really means jackal. And it is true that there is similarity between those two Hebrew words. But is it a dragon or a jackal? Well, let me just give you one argument that it's a dragon, that dragon is a better word choice. In Jeremiah chapter 51, Jeremiah says that Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, hath devoured me, he hath crushed me, he hath made me an empty vessel, he hath swallowed me up like a dragon. Okay, so which of these two animals does this sound more like? Does it sound like the one on the left, a jackal? Or does it sound more like this guy? I don't know about you, but I'm going with the one on the right. Okay, that sounds a lot more like a dragon or a dinosaur than a jackal. In fact, Isaiah actually mentions flying serpents in Isaiah 14:29 and Isaiah 36. And I will freely admit that I don't know a lick of Hebrew, but I can tell you this. I've looked up that word in a concordance, and sure enough, that word has connotations of flight. If you look in other passages, it seems to be saying flying. The newer translations say, oh, it's a darting serpent. But it doesn't appear to really be justified from the grammar. And we know there were flying reptiles. We know there were flying serpents, okay? But they didn't live millions of years ago like we were taught. And dragons, you would be amazed at how much dragons show up in secular history. Those of you high school students, you're probably going to have to read Beowulf before you get out of high school. When you do, just keep dinosaurs in the back of your mind, okay? Because we think some of these creatures sound like they possibly could have been dinosaurs or other great dragon-like animals. Now, of course, we're arguing this is the reason we have all these dragon stories from around the world. If you'd like to learn more about this, there's a free book. You can read it online for free by Dr. Bill Cooper. He's a creation researcher in Great Britain. And he wrote a book called After the Flood, in which he actually traced the ancestries of some of these early European peoples all the way back to Noah through his son Japheth. But he's also got three chapters on dinosaurs and how early Europeans encountered dinosaurs. And it's just absolutely fascinating reading. It's just really, really interesting stuff. And I would encourage you to, if you get on the internet at home and look that up. But people also, they didn't just write about these animals. And by the way, a lot of these accounts are sober historical records. Some of them have been embellished, but many of them are just very matter-of-fact descriptions of dragon-like animals. But they also drew pictures of them. This is a close-up of a carving in this temple, the Angkor Wat Temple in Cambodia. It's thought to be about 1,000 years old. Anybody want to take a guess at what this animal kind of looks like right here? Yeah, it looks like a stegosaurus. Okay, well, how is that? How is it that somebody drew a fairly accurate representation of a stegosaurus if all these stegosauruses had gone extinct millions of years ago? Now, when you point this out to some evolutionists, they will say, oh, well, you know, they found somehow these ancient peoples found dinosaur bones and figured out what the animals look like. Well, there's all kind of problems with that. First of all, I don't know how many ancient civilizations had a thriving paleontology program. But even if you ignore that, there's lots of stuff about these the animals you cannot infer from the fossils. Like, you know, for instance, some of these dinosaurs, they have things that they call dermal frills. We did not find out about that until fairly recently, and yet some of these depictions have those. They're soft features that you see that you don't see how they could have figured that out. And also, remember that it's hard to do. The early paleontologists made lots of mistakes when they were trying to reconstruct these animals. And so it's really hard to believe that they could have just somehow by looking at fossils, have gotten all these details correct. This one is another one from a cathedral in the United Kingdom. It's actually a brass engraving that's around a bishop's tomb. And you look at it, and boy, that kind of looks like a dinosaur, right? And so does this. Now, it is true that the heads seem to have been worn out a little bit. People have been walking on it for 500 years. But that really does look like two dinosaurs. This is a cylinder seal from the Middle East. If I'm not mistaken, it's housed in the Louvre in Paris. What they would do is they would take these cylinder seals and roll them out on clay, and you would get this impression like this. And as you can see, you've got over and over again, you've got these long-necked animals, long tails, muscular bodies, muscular legs. That kind of sounds like a dinosaur to me. You be the judge, but that's what it looks like to me. And this is just a small sampling of what we could show you. I mean, in fact, there are other creationists out there who have, they've collected these pictures, and it's incredible. This is just the tip of the iceberg. There are dozens and dozens and dozens of these pictures. And you look at them and you think, that's a dinosaur. You don't even have to use your imagination. It looks like a dinosaur. So there's lots of historical evidence that people coexisted with the dinosaurs, but there's also scientific evidence that these creatures lived much more recently than we've been led to believe. Now, how many of you have heard about radiocarbon or carbon-14 dating? Yeah. Well, for a long time, evolutionists would beat Christians over the head with that, claiming that it proved long ages. Although a lot of people have some misconceptions about carbon-14 dating. For one thing, carbon-14 dating can't prove an old Earth, okay? Because the ages you get from carbon dating are at most maybe around 40 or 50,000 years. So carbon dating can't prove the Earth is billions of years old, okay? But nevertheless, it does give inflated age estimates, and that's actually pretty easy for us to explain in terms of the Genesis flood, because we think they're making some false assumptions. And if you don't take that into account, your age estimates are typically going to be inflated by a factor of about 10. But the thing about carbon-14 is that it decays back into nitrogen very quickly. If you have a sample of carbon-14, it'll only take about 5,700 years for half of it to turn back into nitrogen. And that's actually pretty quick. And because of that, even the most sensitive scientific instruments on the planet should not be able to detect radiocarbon in something that's more than about 100,000 years old. Well, guess what? We creationists actually bothered to look for radiocarbon in dinosaur bones, and guess what? There's radiocarbon there, okay? It's not supposed to be there, okay? Those bones are supposed to be millions of years old. And so what we're doing is we're now taking radiocarbon and we are now using it to argue against the millions of years. We're saying carbon-14 is actually evidence against an old Earth. And so we find carbon-14 in these dinosaur bones. We find it in other places too. You even find it in diamond. And diamond is supposed to be billions of years old. Now, the evolutionists will try to argue that it's contamination, but at some point, that excuse starts to wear thin because you can't say everything is contaminated. This is an argument that these creatures lived much more recently than we've been led to believe. And there's other scientific evidence for that. As I mentioned earlier in the first session, they're finding soft tissue, pliable soft tissue, original biomolecules in dinosaur bones. And what I want to do now is just show you a clip from the television show 60 Minutes where they interviewed Dr. Mary Schweitzer, who was really the first person to kind of bring this to everybody's attention. So I want to go ahead and show you this clip from 60 Minutes.
Some fragments of the bone in acid to dissolve away the outermost layer of mineral. But the acid worked too fast and all the mineral dissolved away. Being a fossil, there should have been nothing left, but there was, and it was elastic, like living tissue.
This is the piece.
No. She showed us video she took under the microscope.
That's really what happened?
Yes.
That's the dinosaur bone?
Without mineral now. That's what was left.
It looked like the soft tissue she would have expected to find if it had been modern bone. This was impossible. This bone was 68 million years old.
So you see this, and you think, what?
I didn't want to tell anybody.
You'd be ridiculed,
yes.
Right?
And so I said to my technician, okay, do it again, I don't believe it.
And yet, in sample after sample, they were there. Things that looked suspiciously like flexible, transparent blood vessels. She finally mustered the courage to tell Jack.
She said she dissolved the bone away and there were blood vessels. And, you know, I was like, shocked. How could that be? That's right.
The things Mary was finding inside dinosaur bones.
Look at that.
Blood vessels and even what seemed to be intact cells pose a radical challenge to the existing rules of science that organic material can't possibly survive even a million years, let alone 68 million. Mary, Jack, and their team published their...
Okay, now there's a lot we could say about that video. First of all, notice that the one thing they never question is the millions of years. Now, how do they know that these materials can't survive for millions of years? Well, you can do it experiments where you can heat these things up and you can see how long it takes for them to decay. And we understand the chemistry of that pretty well. And if you know that for some temperatures, you can figure out what it would be for other temperatures. And so based on those experiments, we know that at reasonable temperatures that you would expect these materials to be at for, you know, out in the outside for millions of years, they just can't last that long. They just can't last even a million years. And so that's a big problem for them. And this is very, very, very strong evidence that dinosaurs did not live millions of years ago. By the way, it was kind of funny. Jack in the video was Jack Horner. He's a famous paleontologist. I actually passed by him once when I was visiting the Museum of the Rockies. Just he walked by. But did you notice when Leslie Stahl asked the question, how can that be? He goes, yeah, how can that be? He looked a little nervous, like he was a little uncomfortable. It was almost like he was worried that one of those crazy creationists was going to grab a hold of that video clip and go around showing it to people to show them that dinosaurs didn't live millions of years ago. And of course, that's exactly what we are going to do. Okay, they didn't live millions of years ago. By the way, Mary Schweitzer, I'm convinced, is a genuine Christian, but she's not a creationist. She believes in the millions of years. But she actually came down here not too long ago, and we were able to go hear her talk when she came down for a paleontology meeting a while back. So you may be wondering, okay, well, what happened to the dinosaurs? Okay, well, we think there was an ice age that followed the Genesis flood. Lord willing, that's what we're going to be talking about in the next session. And the ice age probably wouldn't have been too bad. We think there was a lot of rainfall associated with that. So if you were in the Middle East, probably it would have been great for dinosaurs. But after that, things started to dry out. The climate started getting a lot harsher. There would have been less vegetation. You know, the deserts, you start seeing these deserts. It would have been harder for them to find food. So they probably had a harder time after that. So they were limited where they could go. And frankly, we think probably we killed them off probably because we were scared of them. However, there's good reason to think that some of these dinosaurs survived even until the Middle Ages or even later. Because you remember all those historians I talked about who mentioned these creatures. So if they, you know, they apparently went extinct, but it wasn't all at once. Apparently it was gradual. Okay, some of them may have gone extinct here at some time and then over here at another later time. It doesn't seem to be something that happened all at once. But eventually they went extinct. Although, you know, you hear these rumors about possible living dinosaurs in parts of Africa. I don't know about you, but I think that would be really cool if that turned out to be the case. And who knows, kids, maybe when the Lord comes back, since he's going to restore all things, maybe, just maybe, it may not be too late for you to have your pet dinosaur. I think that would be really cool. So we've got a lot of resources on this subject. We've got our Guide to Dinosaurs, which is a really nicely illustrated book, good for kids, on explaining dinosaurs in a biblical worldview. We've got our Dinosaurs, God's Mysterious Creatures, which is good for younger kids. We've run out of our Creation Basics and Beyond, but Joel back there has little cards. If you want to order something here that we ran out of, you can get one of those cards from Joel, and it has a discount code where you can go to the ISAR website and still get that discount for coming to the conference. So if we ran out of something that you want to, be sure to get one of those cards from Joel. We've also got our DVD series, Uncovering the Truth About Dinosaurs, and I want to go ahead and show you a little promo clip for that.
You know, dinosaurs are used more than just about any other topic to really inundate people with evolutionary thinking.
You would assume that canyon required many years to form, but instead it was formed in a single day.
Whoa, what have we got here? It seems to describe what the Bible is talking about. It talks about a global deluge.
Part of this evolutionary story asserts that dinosaurs evolved into birds.
We are not the product of evolution, and we have not been here for millions of years.
The discovery of soft tissues in dinosaur fossils sparked a revolution in paleontology.
But there are indications in the fossils that this story doesn't add up.
This is a great bit of evidence that points towards a young Earth, that these fossils are not millions of years old, but were buried only a few thousands of years ago.
We see flood sediments pushed way up into these mountains. Tremendous upheaval was going on in the Earth.
This is bigger than an asteroid.
there's a consistent pattern of the water moving across continents, 1,000 feet or more above present sea level.
We can use the truth about dinosaurs to show people that the Bible really is true from the very beginning.
What happened to them? Did they slowly go extinct? Or was it something sudden, something global, cataclysmic? Can science answer these questions? Can the Bible unravel this mystery? Uncovering the truth about dinosaurs.
Yeah, I think that video of the dinosaurs tromping through the floodwaters, boy, that is really cool. Let's see, what else? We also have our Discovery Center. If you ever are in the Dallas area, I hope you'll come and visit it. We've got some really cool stuff there to show you. And again, please, if you haven't signed up for our magazine, please do it. Acts and Facts, it's a free resource for you. It's paid for by our donors. But every month we answer these questions that people have about creation versus evolution. And we have the sign-up sheet out there. So that's really all I've got for this session. But I hope it was a blessing to you. And of course, feel free to ask questions. I believe we're going to have a Q&A later in the afternoon as well. Thank you.